Panpsychism is not as radical as you may think. It doesn't imply that the laws of physics are wrong, for example. In fact, it doesn't really have anything to say about physics. Physical science in general handles what matter does: behavior, structure, relation, and so on. Physics does not tell us about what matter is, the intrinsic nature of matter, insofar as matter has a nature beyond what it does. Or at least so argued Bertrand Russell almost a century ago, when he was developing what is now known as Russellian monism. Most prominent modern panpsychists are Russellian monists, as far as I can tell, like Galen Strawson, Philip Goff, and Hedda Hasselmerck. They believe that there are two aspects to matter, an intrinsic nature and a dispositional nature, and that physical science only tells us about the latter. Your consciousness is the intrinsic nature of the matter of which you were made, but others can't be sure that you're conscious because they can only see the external, behavioral, dispositional aspect of the matter of which you're made. They can only see one aspect. You have to be the matter in question to observe the other aspect. Otherwise, this internal aspect is completely unobservable. That's why we even have a problem of other minds. One substance, two aspects. Physics doesn't suggest fundamental reality is non-experiential. It doesn't suggest anything, one way or the other. This is what Galen Strawson calls the silence of physics, and it's one insight of Russellian monism that goes hand in hand with its dual aspect vision of matter. Sabine Hossenfelder wrote a critique of panpsychism that's made the rounds. It was originally published in January in blog form, and a couple months later, it was published in Nautilus magazine in their issue devoted to panpsychism. Hossenfelder is a theoretical physicist, and she argues that physics has ruled out panpsychism. I'm going to read her debunking of panpsychism almost in its entirety. It's a relatively short piece. Quote, "I recently discovered panpsychism. That's the idea that all matter, animate or inanimate, is conscious. We just happen to be somewhat more conscious than carrots. Panpsychism is the modern élan vital." When I say I discovered panpsychism, I mean there's a bunch of philosophers who produce pamphlets about it. How do these philosophers address the conflict with evidence? Simple. They don't. Can elementary particles be conscious? No, they can't. It's in conflict with evidence. Here's why. We know 25 elementary particles. These are collected in the standard model of particle physics. The predictions of the standard model agree with experiment to best precision. The particles in the standard model are classified by their properties, which are collectively called quantum numbers. The electron, for example, has an electric charge of -1 and can have a spin of -1/2 or +1/2. There are a few other quantum numbers with complicated names, such as the weak hypercharge, but it's really not so important. Point is, there are a handful of those quantum numbers, and they uniquely identify an elementary particle. If you calculate how many particles of a certain type are produced in a particle collision, the result depends on how many variants of the produced particle exist. In particular, it depends on the different values the quantum numbers can take. Since the particles have quantum properties, anything that can happen will happen. If a particle exists in many variants, you'll produce them all, regardless of whether or not you can distinguish them. The result is that you see more of them than the standard model predicts. Now, if you want a particle to be conscious, your minimum expectation should be that the particle can change. It's hard to have an inner life with only one thought, but if electrons could have thoughts, we'd long have seen this in particle collisions because it would change the number of particles produced in collisions. In other words, electrons aren't conscious and neither are any particles. It's incompatible with data. End quote. When physics is invoked in this way against panpsychism, the critic is usually arguing one of two things: that we should expect an extra physical substance to be produced when consciousness is present, or the presence of consciousness implies some kind of indeterministic freedom, and that the normal laws of physics wouldn't necessarily apply if, say, an electron had experience. These physics-based criticisms tend to come from materialists, and yet these are two very anti-materialist beliefs to defend. Jerry Coyne approvingly promoted Hossenfelder's critique, but Coyne says he doesn't believe in libertarian free will. So why then is he arguing that we should expect conscious electrons to violate the deterministic laws of physics? Shouldn't they be just as determined as human beings are? Coyne apparently believes that conscious humans are fully determined but that conscious particles wouldn't be. I think this is pretty strange, since he also apparently believes we're made of nothing but particles. Russellian panpsychists believe experience is the internal aspect to matter, not that it's a libertarian indeterministic substance that has the power to override physical law. Hossenfelder said, quote, "If you want a particle to be conscious, your minimum expectation should be that the particle can change," end quote. There are two ways to make sense of her argument there, and I'll tackle both of them. If I interpret her point to be, if particles are conscious, then they should be flitting about however they want, not according to deterministic laws, then the only way I can make sense of that assertion is if I conflate consciousness with libertarian free will, which are two entirely distinct concepts. Does Hossenfelder think that she, as a conscious entity, can violate physical law? I would assume not, but then how am I supposed to make sense of her argument against conscious particles? Her second point, which I take to be the main argument, is essentially that if consciousness were present, we should expect to observe a consciousness particle, a mental substance, if you will. So her first argument seems to assume libertarian free will, and her second argument, substance dualism. Pretty strange for a hard-nosed physicalist like herself. Quote, "If electrons could have thoughts, we'd long have seen this in particle collisions because it would change the number of particles produced in collisions," end quote. Here she seems to be assuming that consciousness would manifest as a substance, and strictly speaking, her implicit view of consciousness as a mental substance is not substance dualism, since most dualists would believe that mental substance is not observable. But her unusual vision of experience as a sort of stuff that we can detect like an electron is what I'm getting at. She's assuming that consciousness is a mental substance. Hossenfelder seems to be under the impression that panpsychism can be empirically tested, which is news to me. In fact, that it's untestable is usually the complaint about panpsychism. I can't know whether an electron is conscious for the same reason I can't know that you're conscious. Experience, though entirely real, for some reason can't be observed from a third-person perspective. We have to use reason to figure out where it resides, since there is no observing it. I'll briefly remind you that we can subvert many arguments against panpsychism simply by pointing out all the things that are not consciousness. By consciousness, I simply mean experience, that it's like something to be. Here are some things that are different from what I just said. Libertarian free will, language, the ability to speak, thinking. The title of Hossenfelder's rant is "Electrons Don't Think." I agree. To quote Coleman Hughes, "We conflate thinking with consciousness. It just so happens that humans think constantly, so we assume thinking is intrinsic to consciousness. But consciousness is different from thinking, certainly from linguistic thought." End quote. If I had a dollar for every time I heard some variation of, "If panpsychism is true, why can't rocks talk?" I would be a rich panpsychist. Again, language is not consciousness. The ability to speak is not consciousness. Thinking is not consciousness. The ability to violate the laws of physics is not what the word consciousness means. And as long as you're not a substance dualist, consciousness is not a new particle, separate from all the other particles of which you're composed. Hossenfelder's main argument implicitly endorses a substance dualist understanding of experience, since she seems to think that the absence of a consciousness substance proves that there is no experience present. If we're physicalist monists, and we take her argument that we see no new particles as proof that the matter observed isn't conscious, I believe we're backed into the corner of strong illusionism. Nothing extra that can be observed is produced in a particle collision, so there is no consciousness present, according to Hossenfelder. But I don't think she would believe that there's an extra substance being produced by your brain activity either. There's no mental substance secreting from your brain that could be put on a glass slide under a microscope, or could be measured by a physicist. So if we're taking her argument seriously, this disproves the notion that human beings are conscious. When she goes on to talk about changing the standard model of particle physics to accommodate panpsychism, the point she's missing is that consciousness is unobservable. In fact, that's usually the complaint about panpsychism, It's unfalsifiable. And those who claim it's unfalsifiable are correct. It's totally unfalsifiable. So is materialism, but we'll come back to that. Either panpsychism is unfalsifiable, or you've falsified it. It can't both be unfalsifiable and in conflict with data. You can't have it both ways. Consciousness is a unique problem because the phenomenon in question can't be observed, and thus empirical observation can't settle disputes. We're stuck using reason alone to solve this problem. So if you're normally inclined to believe that the demarcation between science and pseudoscience is falsifiability, you're going to have to bracket your normal rules here. Consciousness is unobservable, except in your own case. Yet we know with certainty that it's real, and thus deserving of an explanation. Popper's criterion of unfalsifiability would prevent us from even trying to explain consciousness. It's a unique problem. There's an asterisk to the unfalsifiability question as well. Though panpsychism itself is unfalsifiable, there are scientific theories that are empirically testable that imply panpsychism, like the neuroscientist Giulio Tononi's integrated information theory. Integrated information theory is a leading theory of consciousness, and it implies panpsychism. IIT makes falsifiable predictions, so if our credence in IIT is raised, our credence in panpsychism is raised. But that's ultimately a footnote. Unfalsifiability doesn't matter when it comes to an explanation of experience or Hegelian consciousness. Materialism is unfalsifiable in the same way panpsychism is unfalsifiable, the same exact way. So if you're going to disqualify panpsychism on grounds that it's unfalsifiable, then you must also disqualify materialism. You have never observed matter to be non-conscious. No one has ever observed matter to be conscious or non-conscious. Experience is always inferred, it's never observed. You project it onto collections of matter out in the world, and you do so using your theory of mind module that has evolved in humans as well as many non-human animals. Panpsychism and materialism are both unfalsifiable, meaning you can't prove or disprove either one using a particle collider. That's because panpsychism, like materialism, is not a scientific theory or a scientific fact. They're both metaphysical interpretations of facts. They both have theoretical virtues and shortcomings. But one thing they are not is empirically testable. We can only arrive at whichever view we subscribe to through reason. We have to use reason to arrive at materialism. We haven't observed it to be true. So if you're saying something to the effect of, "I like materialism because I want to empirically confirm my ideas," then you don't know what you're talking about. I'll just say this one more time. You have never observed matter to be non-conscious. Consciousness is not a structural property or a behavior that can be observed from a third-person point of view. If consciousness is the one thing that can't be an illusion, and we believe we're composed of matter, nothing more, nothing less, it follows that we know that at least some of the time, matter has an internal aspect in addition to behavioral properties. Perhaps all the time. Come to think of it, what is the evidence that there is any matter for which it's not like something to be? We know that physical goings-on are synonymous with conscious goings-on at least some of the time, and we have zero insight regarding the intrinsic nature of physical goings-on, except in our own case. That is our starting point. This realization leads to a dramatic burden shift. The burden is entirely on the one who wants to say there is such a thing as non-conscious matter. Hassenfelder's main objection is based on a misunderstanding of what panpsychists are proposing. We do not think there are more constituents to matter that are yet undiscovered. The objection that we can't introduce a new particle underlying everyday life is as potent of an objection to substance dualism as ever, but we are not substance dualists. Matter has an intrinsic nature that you happen to be directly acquainted with as a collection of matter yourself. You are not separate from the universe, peering in. To quote Schopenhauer, "Materialism is the philosophy of the subject who forgets himself in his calculation." Russellian panpsychists believe that matter has an internal aspect that physical science can't get at because it's not empirically observable. And if you doubt the existence of this aspect, then I would simply ask why there is a problem of solipsism and other minds. If everything real can be observed, why are you not as certain of my experience as you are of your own? The way that Russellian monists make sense of this is with dual-aspect monism. There's one substance with two aspects. I think this dual-aspect nature of the matter of which we're made is common to all matter, on grounds of simplicity, anti-emergence, and the fact that we're not made of different stuff than non-human matter. So I believe this dual-aspect character of matter is not arbitrarily unique to humans, but common to all material. A lot of physicists have felt the impulse to chime in on panpsychism. This is because they seem to have gotten the memo that panpsychism is equally about matter, as it is about mind, if not more so. A core insight of Russellian monism is about physics and the nature of matter. This is why physicists, when they impulsively chime in on panpsychism, often miss the point entirely and strawman our position. And it's okay, panpsychists are used to being strawmanned, but many are simply unaware of the philosophical work that opens the door to panpsychism, and mistakenly think that physics knowledge is going to shut us up. It's not that we're anti-physics or anti-physical science, we're just not deluded into thinking that it can give us the type of knowledge associated with consciousness. The idea that matter lacks an internal aspect has the benefit of being naturally favored by our psychological theory of mind. It's also Descartes' vision of physical matter. We have a strong bias in favor of Descartes' view of matter due to our evolved intuitions. But our intuitions have been wrong before, and I think they're also wrong here. We do not possess objective consciousness-detecting hardware as human beings. We have demonstrably faulty cognitive shortcuts, and these shortcuts redound to the benefit of materialism, whether or not it happens to reflect the way things really are. And by materialism in this context, I simply mean the thesis that matter is non-conscious, which is a belief shared by dualists. Paul Bloom has argued that we're natural-born dualists, and my point and his are identical. We naturally judge non-human matter to be wholly non-experiential. This is the Cartesian view of matter that's accepted by materialists and dualists alike. Panpsychism is simply the view that consciousness, that it's like something to be, is a lot more pervasive than we're naturally inclined to believe. Thank you for listening. I've been Emerson Green, and I'll talk to you next time.